I had been covering foreign affairs as a foreign correspondent at the street level for a long time in places like Syria and Libya and Yemen. And I went through a period where I really found myself wanting to step back and take kind of a broader look at foreign affairs, to look at some of the frameworks of American foreign policy, the traditions of American foreign policy. I came across this period, the mid-19th century, and the diplomacy of the Civil War, and I was just kind of sucked in. I mean, you've got Lincoln's minister to Russia, Cassius Marcellus Clay, is this character who walks around the streets of St. Petersburg with Bowie knives dangling from his waistband and getting in fist fights. I mean, the characters are like something out of a novel. But for whatever reason, there hadn't been a holistic human account of Lincoln's role in international affairs in nearly 70 years, which is before the Lincoln Papers were even released in 1947. And so there's a lot of water under the bridge since then.
Well, it's surprising to me on one hand, because you see so many things written about Lincoln that people have not addressed this part of his administration. At the same time, that period of time when such focus was being put on the domestic front because of the Civil War and other tensions that were going on in the U.S., I guess maybe it's not so surprising.
Right. Well, I think there were two reasons for that. One is the one that you just pointed out, that you know, we think of the Civil War as a domestic conflict, and it was, and so that just sucked up a lot of the oxygen when you're talking about the Civil War and Lincoln. But the other thing is that Lincoln had a very strong and competent Secretary of State in William Henry Seward, and he delegated a lot of daily foreign affairs business to Seward. So if you put Lincoln right at the center of his own foreign policy, you end up with a hagiography, because Lincoln didn't do everything in international affairs. But the things that Lincoln did do were really important. And so what I've done is taken a kind of an episodic approach and looked at some of those things that Lincoln did do in international affairs without saying that he did every single thing.
Well, give us an idea of what Lincoln was involved with and sort of his views on the U.S. and its role on the world stage.
Right. Well, the biggest thing that Lincoln had to deal with is to keep the European powers, primarily Britain and France, from intervening on the side of the Confederacy, which could have changed the course of the war. And he was successful to a large degree at that. But he also had to deal with a series of discrete crises, diplomatic crises, with Spain, with France, with Britain, throughout the course of the war. And wanted just to give you one example. The French Emperor, Napoleon III, invaded Mexico in the early days of the Civil War, conquered Mexico City in 1863, and installed his puppet on the Mexican throne a year later. This is something we kind of forget about during the Civil War, that there was this major challenge to the Monroe Doctrine just south of the Rio Grande, and that was something that Lincoln had to deal with, and I think ultimately he dealt with very successfully.
We're speaking with author Kevin Perino. He is author of Lincoln in the World. And he's going to be speaking in Springfield tomorrow night at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum. Were you surprised on anything you found out about Lincoln? Did you go into this with an idea of what you would discover? Were there some real surprises, though, that came out?
I was surprised by a lot, but it wasn't the kind of surprise, you know, Lincoln had slaves or something that, you know, turns your idea of Lincoln and the Civil War upside down. The great scholar of the Civil War, James McPherson, has said that there isn't much about the Civil War that we don't know, but there are a lot of things that we don't know fully, and foreign affairs is one of those things. And I'll tell you one of the interesting things, I think this is fascinating, why there's been such a boom in Lincoln scholarship in recent years in terms of the quality of the stuff, not just the quantity, is that Lincoln scholars have gone to the papers of past historians of Lincoln and the Civil War and kind of combed through their note cards and found things that have ended up on the cutting room floor, which has added to our understanding. Because I could go to these papers and look at these things through the lens of foreign policy and pick things out that I hadn't seen other places. And to give you just one example, Mary Lincoln's role was something that I was surprised by. I mean, we have this view of Mary Lincoln as a difficult person who had a difficult life, but she was, what we forget is that she was actually more cosmopolitan than Lincoln in a lot of ways. She grew up in this house in Kentucky, which was considered it was called the Athens of the West at that time. She went to a school where the students spoke French. So she and her family, the Todds, kind of lorded this over Lincoln. And Lincoln liked to say, 1D was good enough for God, but not for the Todds. You know, they let him know that, that they were more cosmopolitan. And Mary actually interfered in diplomatic appointments to some degree. She tried to get her candidates appointed to consulships in Scotland and in the Sandwich Islands, which is modern-day Hawaii. Sometimes she was successful at it, sometimes she wasn't. But this is something that came out partly from going to these papers of past Mary Lincoln biographers that are now in places, university libraries and the Library of Congress.
Well, there had to be people wondering from abroad when they saw the Civil War taking place, the fight over slavery in the U.S. There had to be people wondering if the U.S. was just coming apart at the seams, probably people in this country who thought the same thing. Did that hurt Lincoln's ability to have a foreign policy and have relationships with people outside of the U.S.?
Yes. I mean, there was a kind of visceral gleefulness, especially from aristocratic Britons and Frenchmen who kind of enjoyed seeing the trouble in the across the Atlantic. And the British Prime Minister liked to kind of crow about the disunited States of America, he would call them. And after Bull Run, he would talk about Yankees Run. That's the phrase that he would use. But I think when cooler heads kind of considered the issue, they realized that they didn't really have much of an interest in intervening in the war. There were some kind of profound commercial, trade, financial ties with Britain, for one. Britain was the United States' largest creditor, so it wasn't necessarily in British interests to kind of rupture those emerging bonds. I think what Lincoln was really good at is recognizing what the true interests of these European powers really were, and then not doing anything to mess them up.
Well, you'd also point out that Lincoln was respected by many of the foreign contemporaries as well, people of that time, including Karl Marx. They may not have been avid supporters necessarily of Lincoln on everything, but they certainly had he had their respect.
Marx was an interesting figure. I wouldn't say Marx respected Lincoln at the beginning of the war, but Marx, just by way of background, I mean, he was a journalist living in exile in London at this time. He was writing for, at the beginning of the war at least, for the New York Tribune, which had a circulation of 200,000 in the United States. So Lincoln may well have read some of the things that Marx was writing. Marx wrote about 300 or 400 articles for the Tribune, and Lincoln read the Tribune religiously. So he never said, "I read this article by Karl Marx," and a lot of the articles were not bylined, but he may well have. Marx viewed the Civil War, he was watching it very carefully, and Marx believed that if the bourgeois union could triumph over the Southern aristocracy, then the United States was that much closer to the proletariat, the workers triumphing over both. So he wanted the Union to win for a different reason than Lincoln did, and he didn't particularly respect Lincoln as a leader, but by the end of the war, he certainly talked like he did, and he had come to see that Lincoln was a useful figure, and European workers sometimes rallied around the image of Lincoln, the liberator. One of the things that I think is interesting is that the similarities in the times. The mid-19th century was a period of globalization, essentially. It was the advent of the telegraph and the steamship, and there was a major boom in newspaper readership. And so the world was shrinking, not unlike our own world. At the same time, it was an age of nationalism. Otto von Bismarck took power as prime minister in Prussia in 1862. Palmerston, the prime minister of Britain. On the one hand, it's an age of kind of hard-headed realism, an age of nationalism where nations are competing pretty vigorously on the world stage. But the overlay is this world where the world is shrinking, national ties are becoming closer than ever. And so in that way, I think it resembles our contemporary globe in some important ways.